This is the end of history.
A true revolution of values will soon cause us to question the fairness and justice of many of our past and present policies.
We believe that peace is at hand.
An axis of evil arming to threaten the peace of the world.
Hey, listeners, this is J.B. Shreve with The End of History, and I'm here with Dr. Malachi Nichols and Lindy Summers, and we are going to talk about one more time, at least one more time. We're going to be talking about the coronavirus, the COVID-19. I found out today or yesterday that calling it the Wuhan virus is now considered racist, so we won't be talking about the Wuhan virus. Did y'all see that?
Yes.
Where is that coming from?
Well, I mean, I think they're saying that, you know, any type of disease or anything with the nationality or, you know, region, you know, it shouldn't say that because diseases
like Spanish flu?
Right.
Zaire,
right.
Ebola?
But it's all based in like where it originated or where
Middle East discovered it.
You know,
syndrome?
I know. Yeah. So anyways, but apparently it's politically incorrect.
Well, I think if this thing continues to surge, becomes bigger, things like that will become less important.
Right.
And people will start focusing on some of these bigger deals. Maybe that's just the nature of Twitter. But that's one of the things we're going to look at tonight. What we want to do, I guess the objective for this podcast episode tonight, we're going to look at the coronavirus. Dr. Lofton was going to join us, but he's actually sick. He has not the coronavirus, we're pretty sure. Of course, who knows, because the testing kits have not really made it out very far yet, but he is under the weather, and so he will not be joining us tonight. But Dr. Nichols is filling in. He's not an MD, but he is a doctor, so we'll just let that count.
Just let that one slide.
Just let that one slide. So what we want to look at is a reasonable response to this thing. We were talking before we went live here that today, as I was sitting at my desk, I just kept getting tweets. I kept getting WhatsApp messages, text messages. There was a greater sense of alarm in the air. And there was a greater sense. I kept getting alerts about, like, I think New York. What did they do with some town? They shut down a town up there or they put it under, it sounded like martial law. I don't think that's what it was. But they basically, I wish I had that story in front of me so I could say what actually happened there. But it was, they basically brought the National Guard out, put them in this town to help contain the coronavirus as far as the outbreak there. It's getting bigger and bigger in New York. That's going on. Lots of stuff taking place in the U.S. as this thing starts to spread. Maybe what I'll do is just start off with some of the, or we'll start off with some of the big things that are occurring right now. Right now, globally, there are 119,000 confirmed cases around the world of this coronavirus. 4,300 deaths so far. The big surges right now, Italy has taken the second spot, but Italy and Iran are really surging. They both had a spike of 10% day to day from yesterday to today, a spike of 10% in new cases reported for both countries. But Italy is moving ahead. Now, I wrote something at the website. It's literally called Iran is probably lying about the coronavirus. I don't think you can trust what they're saying. I think it's a lot worse in Iran. I think a lot of the experts agree with that it's a lot worse in Iran than what they're saying. But what we're seeing in Italy is really interesting to watch because, Lindy, was it you who told me today, they like in the year 2000 or 2003, they had one of the best healthcare systems in the world?
Yeah, in the WHO, I was going back and looking through, like, just saying, oh, I wonder where all these countries stand, you know, and Italy had one, like, the second best healthcare system as of 2000, and that's a few years ago, but still, you know, you'd think, oh, they would have containment measures or, you know, for pandemics like this, but it's interesting to see that it's the second highest with cases right now.
Right. And then earlier this week, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, they actually quarantined the whole country of Italy, because this thing is spreading so fast.
Yes.
And it's much more deadly in Italy right now. And that's probably, we were talking earlier today, that's probably because of the aged population, a lot of older people, and the older people are much more vulnerable to this outbreak. They're much more vulnerable to the nature of this thing. Really, anyone who has underlying conditions, so chronic conditions already, they're vulnerable. But kind of by definition, that people over 60 years old are going to fall into that classification.
Right.
And I did look to see if I could find, you know, we have the mortality rate, the global mortality rate currently. The World Health Organization has said it's 3.5%. They raised it from 2%. It was 1%, then it was 2%, now it's 3.5%. Right. And those numbers are a little bit dubious. They can change over time. They probably will change over time. Right now, they're holding pretty steady. But I was curious, what is it for older people? Because in Wuhan, in China, and they have turned the corner. There's, I think there were 7 new cases in China today, which is pretty amazing.
Plateauing.
Mm-hmm. Right. But there, it was definitely among the older population where you saw a lot more deaths. So the big bulk of the deaths are in people over 60 years old. So I couldn't find anything really accurate that I trusted as far as the stats on that. But for China, the average was for people over 60 years old, the mortality rate was 15%.
Wow.
So if 100 people get it, 15 people are going to die if they're over 60 years old. That's what the numbers in China showed. And that would kind of bear weight with what's going on in Italy, because the death rates are so high and it's primarily among the elderly population.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we were talking about today, Dr. Lofton actually shared an article that he had come across. And I thought about quoting it. I thought about talking about it more in depth today in this podcast episode. But because you never know what to believe, what's out there, I hesitate to do it. It was in Italian. We had to translate it to read what was going on, which makes us sound really intelligent, but we just use Google Translate to push a button, but to see what's going on. And it was really interesting. And what I did see was, as I paid attention on Twitter today, there was a lot of this same stream of thought coming out of a lot of the Italian tweeters, a lot of the Italian doctors and stuff like that, where there is this great sense of panic. There is this great sense of everyone is taking this too lightly. This is a bigger deal than what you expect, and parents are dying, grandparents are dying. Right. This is not just the flu, and basically wake up world type of thing. And this was coming from, if we can believe they are who they say they are on Twitter, from doctors, from nurses, from health professionals. So did you see anything else like that, either one of y'all?
I saw some similar stuff just about just panic. You know, I read that same article, but it just stood out to me how, you know, hospitals are being overwhelmed and just people not knowing how to deal with it. And just, this sense of underlying panic and worry and fear just spreading across the world.
Right.
So
the information overload is certainly helping with that in the U.S. And so it's difficult to determine what's real, what's hype, what's sensation, what's going to get me a retweet, what's going to get me a link click. Right. But definitely something is real here. On February 21st, Italy had their first 3 locally transmitted cases. And today there was 10,000 confirmed cases in Italy. And so that's, 3 weeks? Not even 3 weeks time that's gone by there. And so this thing is growing exponentially. It's not just compounding. Mm-hmm. It's growing exponentially. No. 631 deaths in Italy, so a 6% mortality rate, well above the average, the 3.5 that the World Health Organization has put out there. And one of the reasons everyone is looking at Italy is because of the advances in its healthcare system, because of the demographics. There are some similarities in Italy to the United States. Yeah. And so some people are suggesting Italy is a shadow of what's about to happen in the United States. Of course, the U.S. has a bigger population. And so today in the U.S., as of the time of this recording, there's approximately 1,000 confirmed cases in the U.S., 30 deaths so far. But what has spread, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, that's not huge. But what is spreading is that hype that we were talking about.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm seeing on social media everywhere these photos of stores with the toilet paper shelves cleaned off.
Oh, yeah.
Not really tracking that. I don't see, I'm not sure what everybody's needing all this toilet paper
for. It's so interesting. I'm like, I would be like, oh, let's go get some food, maybe? Yeah. I don't know.
I read an article today about what is the issue behind kind of the psych behind why people go get toilet tissue, and the main thing was it exhibits just a level of something they can control. I can get toilet paper, so therefore I'm in some mode of control.
Right.
My great-grandmother and grandfather, they were alive through the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. And I remember going over to their house when we were kids, and they both passed away, long since passed away, 10, 20 years ago. But we would go over to their house, and she was a bit of a hoarder, but because of having lived through the Great Depression, living in the country and been without, there was literally a room full of toilet paper in their house.
Wow.
And it was like a room full of different things like that, like real bare base necessities. Mm-hmm. But like they were ready. They were the type of couple when we lived in the mountains, and when they would drive down the hills, they would turn off the engine and just push down the clutch. They called it choking Hitler. And it was the way that they would save gas. It was the idea behind it, because apparently that's something they did during World War II. And here we are, you know, 80 years after the Great Depression. Well, not even that, 90 years after the Great Depression. And we're seeing some of that similar stuff. It's just odd to watch the things that people cling to for that security. However, and we're going to get to that in the course of this episode, I think there is a place for being prepared. And so without going to extremes and getting weird. So we're going to talk about that before we're done. But on top of the run on the stores, there's also been major cancellations today. So like Harvard that said don't come back from spring break to their students until this thing is...
I think there are quite a few schools on the East Coast that did that.
Yeah. I know the Ivy League canceled their basketball tournament, their conference tournament, which is a big loss, really. It's the Ivy League. But it really has me concerned that March Madness is going to be affected, because that and the presidential race are like my two favorite sporting events. And I'm not... Could I lose both of these? And by the way, our three leading contenders for president right now, Biden, Sanders, and Trump, all fall into that vulnerable category, and they're going all over the country.
Wasn't there something about them shutting down campaigns right now?
I thought
there was something about that.
I saw that Biden and Sanders both said that they've got the primaries going on tonight. We're recording this on Tuesday night, so they've got primaries going on in five states. I don't know how permanent that is. It may have just been to give them both an excuse to go home and take a nap. I don't know, but I think it is interesting to see the category and as far as the demographics of who their supporters are, who they are, and then the convergence with this coronavirus coming up.
Right.
Any other major cancellations or major events today that you saw that just stood out as far as the American picture?
Oh, the American picture.
You know, I think another kind of stream, and this is my area, is schools. There's been, there's schools are now setting up personal, like, health advisory and updates about where the school districts are at. Parents are becoming more just knowledgeable and asking and inquiring, like, what are the schools going to do if there's a case? What is the plan? What is the setup? Are we going to do, remote learning? So I think it's starting to trickle from the parents and even to the kids. So that's another thing that I'm seeing especially inside the U.S., is that trickling down to our schools and to our students are being aware of this is something. This is much more than talk, but this is reality.
Right. I saw some outrage stuff today where apparently there was a couple in Missouri who were supposed to be on self quarantine, and they were driving their daughter to like school events. And because they had come back from one of the big bad places. Oh, that was another thing. Several congressmen self quarantine. Because they were in contact with a guy at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Committee conference at the end of February, who had coronavirus.
Wow.
And President Trump apparently shook hands with one of the people who shook hands with the guy who had it or something like that. So there's that. It's like right there at the doorway. It's like everything's right there, this potential major, major crisis.
And yet
at the same time, is it real or is it not real?
Right. Yeah, and I was going to jump off of what Malachi said, because same thing for, I work for a corporation, and so they're same thing. They're saying work from home, like if you need to, we're taking precautions, on travel, things like that. It's just really interesting how, I mean, everybody is affected inside of this. So.
Yeah.
Well, almost everybody. I would say, you know, I think we've talked about the extreme of people's responses, but there's also this other level of unawareness.
Right.
And also everything mm-hmm. else is fine. I was sitting today at a coffee shop and a newspaper were interviewing two big wigs in the real estate industry. And they were saying, "Ah, man, this is nothing. This is great for business though. Interest rates are low. I'm making a lot of money. I'm thinking about taking a cruise. I'm talking about going to Greece."
And several it's like, jokes about that today.
are you joking or are you serious? Right. You know, this is a reporter and they're going to put that in the paper. So it's there's two sides to it. There's extreme measures and there's also unawareness. And mm-hmm. I'm going to make a nice book. I'm liking to see the stock market tank so I can buy some stock and turn a profit.
So let me ask you something about that, Malachi, because I have seen that too. And it honestly irks me. It kind of mm-hmm. bugs me, the level of, when I see it as denial or, and I don't mean this against Trump supporters at all. It's going to sound that way, and that's not my intent, but it almost seems like they have a political investment that this needs to not be true. This needs to not be real to mm-hmm. validate their beliefs. And on the other side, it's the exact opposite. They need this to be true to validate their beliefs that Trump is inept and incompetent. So, and I get the balance there, but are you seeing denial or are you seeing ignorance when you see that type of thing?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think, you know, it's a little bit of both, right? It's a little bit of, it's denial because, and speaking from a Western perspective, we love to be comfortable, mm-hmm. right? Just a reality. We love air condition. We love fast food. We love things quick. And it's a denial because we recognize if crisis comes, if this is real, this will shake up normalcy for me.
Yeah.
So let mm-hmm. me deny that, right? And then there's this other side of, you know, what was the exact word that you used, Jeff? Denial and ignorance.
Yeah.
Right. And then I think there's ignorance of wanting to, ignorance that's fueled by denial, right?
Yeah.
Ignorance of like, I'm not going to listen to the news. It's fake news, right? I'm not going to, CNN, I'm not going to listen to that. MSNBC, I'm not going to listen to that. Whoever is talking, I'm not going to listen to that because it's all fake news. It's not real.
Right.
But I think what it's touching is that sense of being comfortable, that sense of the unknown, that sense of not wanting to move away from a sense of normalcy,
right?
Because things are good now. Why shake it up?
Right. I think that that's also something unique about this is the incredible lack of trust anywhere
mm-hmm.
For what is being said by the media, by our leaders, and that's bipartisan lack of trust. I think for the most part, people don't take what President Trump says about it very seriously. They kind of know, well, he's not a doctor. You know, his supporters, he's not a doctor. That's fine. I don't trust him I don't count on him to be a doctor. So that's that. His opponents think he's a boob, and that's that. But I don't take him seriously when he gives his input. And he really should stop tweeting about it because every day his tweet gets proven really bad wrong.
Yeah.
But then on the other side, when the Democrats talk about him, use and politicize it, I don't trust them, anything they're saying either because it feels like a political football. And then the media, I'm just wondering, is this real or is this just like all the Trump stuff where you know that mm-hmm. the hype and the outrage will get my attention? And so I'm trying really hard to just go right to the data to see, okay, how fast is this thing really going?
Right. Yeah.
But I think that lack of trust is unique.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, Lindy.
No, you're totally fine. I was going to say that I did read something also, someone was saying, you know, we've heard so much, it's so political mm-hmm. right now, and versus like, you don't hear much about the science or the facts behind what is going on. And obviously that's what we try to present, but it's just interesting how it's like people, it's just common sense is almost left in the dust a little bit in a certain way.
So I would say something's happening right now. We know that much. We're going to get to the reasonable posture here in a moment, and then we want to go from there into a faith-based posture, talking about what that would look like. In the U.S., like I said, 1,000 confirmed cases, a death count of 30 right now, according to coronavirus. So comparing the U.S. to Italy, like I said, Italy had its first case February 21st, and today they are at 10,000 confirmed reports, 631 deaths, and it grows exponentially. The U.S., had their first case, first confirmed locally transmitted case, February 27th. Okay, and I saw an economist actually put out the numbers. He said, "I'm not a health professional, but just looking at the math of how this thing has grown, by March 15th, based upon my calculation, if it keeps on growing at the current rate, we should be, if you exclude China from the report, we should be at non-China global confirmed cases around 80,000. That's March 15th. Wow. So I looked at that, and I think this morning we were at 34,000. So that's 5 days away, March 15th. So that's saying something. That's quite a bit of growth, and that's certainly something I'm going to be watching just as I look at the data to really test, is this thing actually growing, or am I just being hyped type of thing? Right. But I think I look at it, and I want to look at the two different extremes. There's the one extreme that, you know, we go live in a cave, buy up all the Lysol, buy up all the toilet paper, go hide in our cave until this thing is over. I think it's pretty easy to say that's probably not where we want to go. We don't want to be living in that. I remember going through Y2K when I was younger, and it just felt so wrong what was going on, and I knew it, and I was surprised by how many people fell for it, and then how many people acted like they didn't fall for anything when it was all said and done and over with. And there are people right now getting all hyped and getting all excited, and they're going too far to that extreme. The other extreme is that denial position, the kind of the head in the sand type of posture. Right. And I wanted to, I guess, just kind of give a reasonable perspective on that. It's kind of like whenever I see those things, I guess I want to know how to separate the naysayers who are doing it out of denial, just being in denial, from those who can say really there's not that much going on here. And so some of the common arguments that I see, first, if it's political, I'm automatically discounted, and I think they've got a vested interest, so I'm not really going to take what they're saying as true. But if there's another argument, and y'all may have some other arguments that you want to bring up here that people use to kind of discount this, and one of the, this one is political because it's from the president, but he tweeted this out, but I've heard it in a lot of different forms from other people, just on the streets and other formats. He said, so last year, 37,000 Americans died from the common flu. It averages 27,000 and 70,000 per year. I don't know what that means. There's quite a discrepancy between those two numbers. But he said, nothing is shut down. Life and the economy go on. And this is the moment. At this moment, there are 546 confirmed cases of coronavirus with 22 deaths. Think about that. So that was earlier this week. Mm-hmm. That confirmed case count has almost doubled, and that's why he should just stop tweeting. But that logic there, that this is really just like a bad case of the flu, we shouldn't be so excited on it. There are some fundamental flaws with that argument, and I don't think most people realize or don't recognize what's wrong with it. This is the coronavirus. The flu is a coronavirus, but there is a major difference. And the biggest difference is that mortality rate. The flu has a 0.1%. So 0.1% mortality rate. This right now, based upon what the World Health Organization is seeing globally, has a 3.5% mortality rate, which means it's 35 times deadlier than the flu. Obviously more people die from the flu because millions more have contracted the flu. And so if millions of people contract this coronavirus, that's a significant problem, and this argument is done away with. Hopefully it won't get that bad. But that's one of the major arguments that I see out there that just don't make sense. It doesn't make sense because they don't know the reality of what's behind these two things. Right. Is there one that y'all have seen?
Another one that I see that kind of connects to the denial is a lack of awareness of just the globalization of the coronavirus, right? The denial is always based on, it's not here in the U.S. It's not big in the U.S. it's not where I'm at. Mm-hmm. And so therefore it's not a big deal with, and I think that is sound in a bubble, right?
Right.
That sounds nice inside of sea to shining sea. But once you look around the earth, you should recognize that this is not nothing. This transcends, you know, boundaries than our own border. So I think that's something else that I see. It's like, it's not happening here. It's not big in the U.S. It's not that big of a deal with the lack of light. Don't you see China? Don't you see Italy? Don't you see all of these other nations with it?
Right.
Yeah, and it makes me think, you know, like in this age of modern medicine, especially for the United States, I don't really think we've seen something like this hit in a very long time. I mean, it's almost like this false sense of invincibility. Like we have all the resources we need to combat it, but we really don't. And so it just is, it's almost like this false, it's like portraying a false sense of security, I guess, in a certain way.
Yeah.
Because it's just something new and that we haven't encountered. So
Lindy and I have been working on this podcast series on the history of pandemics, and we started the research and the development of that before anything like this ever came up. And we thought, hey, this would be a good time for this. And one of the things we're trying to get that released, by the way, if Dr. Lofton would just get healthy enough to record a podcast episode or five, but that's for you, Dr. Lofton, who I know will be listening to this. But one of the things that struck me in all of our research on that is how prior to 1945, 1950, pandemics were pretty common.
Right.
We live at a really odd span moment of history where pandemics are not common, where we have we've been spoiled into thinking this is normal or we've conquered disease. And really there's a lot of threats piling up where it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when the big one is going to hit again, because there are, every century there has been a huge pandemic, and sometimes more than one or five pandemics, from smallpox to flu to cholera. There's been pandemics, and that's been a normal part of human history. Except for the last 60 years, we had all these advances in technology and medicine, and we got to thinking that was normal, but it's not. And you'll have to listen to the series to understand why, but that's what's going on there. I guess one of the places I want to look at also, well, let's look at that. So what is a reasonable posture to the coronavirus as the hype grows? And there is a lot of hype out there. But there's a lot of reality out there. Right. And what do you see as a reasonable response to this thing?
So as far as just practically, I mean, just even taking simple precautions, washing your hands, being respectful of other people. If you're sick, stay home. Mm-hmm. You know, like just these, I don't know, these things that seem very obvious to us, but not everyone practices. And so, inside of practical reasons, I feel like that, you know, hand sanitizer, things like that, just all these things, these simple little things, which they say are the, you know, the WHO, CDC always says are the most effective things to preventing disease, and just taking those steps and not ignoring them, I think would be a good way, a practical way.
Now, one of the problems is that all the stores are now sold out of the sanitizer. So there's that. Carry around some soap.
right. Even people are making their own hand sanitizer, which I was like, what? Are you kidding me? But it can be done, apparently.
Right.
You know, for me, I think I always go back to a basic scripture, 2 Timothy 1-7. For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and love and a sound mind. And I think that the last part is the key for me, a sound mind. Mm-hmm. I think what I try to guard against, even inside of my home, is making decisions based of fear, right? I can remember when we killed the Iranian Soleimani. I can't remember his name. Soleimani. Yep. When we killed him and I got the news and I was watching the news, I can remember sitting on my couch and telling Lindsay, oh man, I need to go fill up all the cars, and get gas in my lawnmower and all this, because I know gas is going to skyrocket tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I sat and recognized, it's like, oh, I'm about to operate out of fear. And so one thing that I always do as far as how can we, what is a reasonable way to address this and even move forward, is to pause.
Right.
You know, before you go out and spend $100 on bacon bits and cereal and, you know, pizzas and hand sanitizers and six types of cough drops, it's like, pause and ask yourself, am I fearful or am I trying to prepare? And there's scripturally, there's nothing wrong with preparing, right? There's nothing wrong with seeing something coming and adjusting your steps today. There's nothing wrong with that. But the key thing is adjusting your steps is based out of faith and based out of protecting your family and try and seeing what's coming and being ready for it, versus hearing the noise, hearing the hype, and then operating. Because when you do that, you might get a lot of stuff, but what you're building is incorrect.
Right. And I think as a leader of a home, you know, as a father, I'm always aware of the things I'm doing are going to shape worldviews and perceptions in my children's eyes. I remember years ago, I read a personal finance book by Susie Orman, and she talked about her parents. When she was young, they owned a restaurant, and there was a fire in the restaurant, and her dad went into the restaurant, grabbed the register, and carried it out, and his hands were like melting on the register, but all of their cash was in the register, and that he had to have that. And that shaped an image in her mind that she, if I recall right, she said she had to get rid of later, but it just automatically imprinted her mind was, this is how important money is.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like, it's because this is where all of our security rests. So the way I respond to these events like a coronavirus outbreak or a pandemic, that's shaping perceptions and worldviews in my children's eyes. They're watching, whether I know they're watching or not, whether they even know they're watching or not. There is observation taking place and there are perceptions being developed. And I totally, totally agree with that idea of making sure fear is not the driver. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's something we have to be conscious of and something we have to do. At the same time, just from a reasonable perspective, this was, I guess, kind of an enlightening thing for me this past weekend. We were out running errands in town, and my son, one of my sons, has special needs, and he would fall into that vulnerable class. He would fall into that classification of, if it hit, we have to watch him extra close. Because there was a time a few years back where he spent, I want to say, a week or two in the intensive care unit for respiratory issues when he was a little guy. And, you know, he still got those things. And he's not very verbal. He has delays and stuff like that. And so he wouldn't be able to communicate to us, I need to go to the doctor type of thing. So there's precautions. There are precautions I have to take just as a father and being when I look at a situation like coronavirus and this outbreak. And so my wife and I, we just discussed it and we went to the store and stocked up on some things. It wasn't toilet paper.
Yeah.
I don't remember seeing a big shortage on toilet paper. We probably bought some this weekend just because it was grocery day.
And
that was normal on the grocery list already. But we also brought laundry detergent. So it's no big deal. But like I'm looking and thinking, okay, if it were to come, what do we need to have? Because I don't really approach this as saying I can stop this from coming. I mean, the reality is we can take precautions. Yeah. I'm probably not going to go to the movies this weekend. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to stay out of places like that for a season until this passes, if hopefully it will. I'm not going to be going to any ball games as much as I want to see March Madness this year. I'm not going to be going to any ball games. There's precautions I'm going to take because I would bring whatever's there back into the house, and that puts my son at risk. But if it were, you know, there's only so many precautions you could take. And if we were to become infected, the whole house is going to get infected. And so the way I looked at it was, okay, what do I need to do to just make the house as comfortable as you can be in that type of situation? And
to be as safe as we can be. And so like making sure our thermometer is good, making sure for my son, the little, I forget what it's called, reads the oxygen count. Anyway, you can put it on his finger. It tells us what is it, what kind of, how, what level of oxygen he's getting.
Mm-hmm.
DayQuil, NyQuil, lots of vitamin C, lots of vitamin D, stuff to make a lot of chicken broth, just basic stuff.
Right.
Well, we're not living in a cave, but if we couldn't get out of the house, if the supply lines, if this is a big deal, the supply lines are shut down, we can't get to Walmart, or we can't get what we want from Walmart, then are we going to be, or is my family going to be okay? And so we did stock up a little bit like that. And to the best of my knowledge, none of it is perishable. In other words, if nothing happens, we got it for next flu season.
Right.
Or to make some other kind of dish with all of that stuff for the broth. I don't know. But to me, that was a more proactive, assertive position than I normally would have. But it felt right. It didn't feel driven by fear, and it felt reasonable, you know, looking at that. And the kids knew what I was doing, put it up, and I didn't feel like I was putting the wrong thing in them as we did that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
And I think another underlying driver, Jeff, is the level of otherness, right? Mm-hmm. You were making decisions not based on what's best for Jeff, but what's best for my family and what's best for others. And I think that's another key position. Even today I picked up some medicines just to have, and I thought, oh, my mother-in-law falls in this category of being vulnerable. Let me text her to see if she has stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's that level of otherness. It's, I think what's required to help it, to make a balanced, approach, a practical approach, but also that then could positively impact others to make a balance and practical approach.
Yeah.
And I think that is another key that, you know, we as believers must have. It's not just us, but it's others.
Right. One of the things, there was a viral video already out of Australia of these two ladies fighting over the last bit of toilet paper. And like, it got violent, this viral video, and charges have actually been filed against them. And that's like the epitome of everything I would never want to be is caught in one of those, whether it's Black Friday or it's pandemic time. I don't want to be that. And when we went to get the, we went to the store this weekend to get our little stash to put in storage in case there is a big outbreak here in our town. We wanted to get two things of the DayQuil NyQuil double pack. And that's because my wife was recently sick and it was a little bit extended, and we went through two of those for fever suppressants, cough suppressants, stuff like that. So we go to get it and there's only two left. And I said, well, I'm not walking around with the last two in the store. I'm not going to be that person.
And, no. And
walked around and my wife said, well, are you going to come back tomorrow and get it? I was like, I probably will. She goes, why don't you just get it then? Nobody's here to get it. It's like, there's just something about the principle. I'm not going to take the last piece.
Right.
And I'm leaving that for someone else. I feel like I'm supposed to do that.
Someone more vulnerable.
Yeah. Someone more vulnerable. There's got to be boundaries. There's got to be rules. There's got to be rules.
Oh gosh.
So that's a reasonable position. And I think you find that reasonable posture through a real discussion with your family, with real discussion with your husband, with your wife, with your roommates, whoever. And I think that's something that needs to happen here, because there is so much external influences trying to pervade our souls and say, you've got to do this or don't do this. You know, it's not denial. It's not escapism. It's, hey, what do we really think is a good approach here? Mm-hmm. Let's use the God-given sense that we have to see where to go here. And then beyond that, and I think this is where I wanted to land tonight, is the faith posture. What is the posture for a people of faith? And believe it or not, this is pretty clear in Scripture. There's like lots of occasions where people are living through crisis and they have to stand in a posture of faith when the world around them is melting down. And the one that sticks out to me is the Passover. I mean, this is a place where we're talking about demographics, about the vulnerable populations. One in every home was killed that night. This, as this
death swept over the land, you know, the oldest in every house. We had a vulnerable demographic population was dead, and there were things that they were required to do to demonstrate we're a people of faith. And yeah. I'm not saying that there are things that we have to do now going through coronavirus and people of faith won't die. That's not what I'm saying at all. Mm-hmm. But I think we can look to scripture and find principle-based responses to the crisis, even of a pandemic, especially mm-hmm. of a pandemic, as we right. look at that. Did y'all look at, I'd mentioned that just in that notes before I, before we scheduled this recording today. Mm-hmm. Did y'all have time to look at that? And did you see anything that, that you wanted to make sure and talk about?
I just was thinking about the aspect of, you know, like you said, the blood on the doorpost and just that whole thing of faith without works is dead kind of thing. Like, we aren't supposed to just stick our heads in the sand, but there are things that steps that we can take, a balance, but ultimately it comes down to our trust in the Lord. Are we going to believe that, you know, he says he will take care of his people? And like you said, it doesn't mean that believers won't be affected or won't die or anything from this virus, but it's seeing the sovereignty of God inside of all of this too, not just because obviously pandemics don't take God by surprise.
Right.
And so it's kind of like, yeah, let's have a managed, good, correct response to it. And, you know, do what we think is right inside of it for our families, for our homes, things like that. So,
yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with praying for physical protection, health protection mm-hmm. for your family. I think I actually think you're probably an idiot if you don't do that.
Right.
And so, if you're probably an idiot without any faith if you don't do that, but
right.
doing that. And then I think even in the story of the Passover, I was looking over it tonight just before we started recording, and it's like, yeah, there's some practical steps right here.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of putting blood over the doorpost, not condoning people go put blood over your doorpost. Don't do it literally.
Right.
But there was this reality that boundaries were put in place.
Yes.
And we don't go beyond this line. And so there was a level of containment. There was a level of responsibility mm-hmm. as far as all that went. I wanted to read this verse. This is Exodus 12, starts at verse 29. And just put it in the framework of a pandemic, like what we're experiencing right now. Now mm-hmm. at midnight, the Lord struck every firstborn male in the land of Egypt, the firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on his throne, to the firstborn of the prisoner who was in the dungeon, every firstborn of the livestock. During the night, Pharaoh got up, he along with all his officials and all the Egyptians, and there was a loud wailing throughout Egypt because there wasn't a house without someone dead. And just mm-hmm. how it spreads across every class, every mm-hmm. ethnicity, everything. There is no divider. There is no
right.
no worldly protection from this thing that's coming. And I'm talking about worst case scenario pandemic. If we're looking at mm-hmm. that. That's one of the things with pandemics. It's non-discriminatory. Everybody's yes. vulnerable. And then, of course, there are segments of the populations and demographics that are the most vulnerable. And that's what we're looking at. And I'm thinking, you know what? This is a real life thing that they were living through.
Mm-hmm.
They had to know what to do. The fathers had to know, what are the instructions for leading my house? There, it says in God's directions to them, it says, make sure you eat, don't leave anything uneaten in this goat or this sheep that you're sacrificing. Make sure you eat every bit of it. And I'm thinking of having a little kid, Timmy, who doesn't want to eat the intestines, who doesn't want to eat, you know, the sheep's ear or whatever. And it's like, you got to eat every bit of it, Timmy. These are the right. rules. This is, you got to take your vitamins. You got to take your medicine. You've got to follow the rules. And we can look at this and we see boundaries. We see prescriptions for a way of life for living through crisis. When I look at this.
No, just going back to what you said, even in verse 4, it says, if any household is too small for a whole lamb, they must share with the nearest neighbor. The aspect, again, as I talked about earlier, taking care of your neighbor, considering those who are more vulnerable, I think right. are key positions that set you apart from the way the world is acting right now. And I think that is key, is starting to set yourself apart, because it who knows how you can positively affect somebody by giving them, you know, helping them out and showing them a balanced approach right. to how to interact with crisis. Right. It could pull them out of crisis and set their family on a greater path. So I think that reality is key.
Right. You know, it's funny, even as you're saying that, I'm thinking how these hoarder mentalities, these guys mm-hmm. going and clearing the shelves out at the store, it's all about my isolated individual survival, me yeah. and mine. And right. you're actually probably safer if you're in community, if you're relating to people through the crisis. Mm-hmm. And not that we all have to go live on a commune or anything like that. I'm just saying, well, like I mentioned to my son the other day who lives on his own with some roommates, I said, hey, y'all need to have a talk. And this is my oldest son. Y'all need to have a talk and define when do we need to call for help if our fevers get too high, if something like that happens.
Yeah.
Because the reality is we've never experienced something like this, never been sick mm-hmm. before. You don't want to be left. You don't want to be isolated through something like this. So why take our preventative measures, our protective measures from the position of let's isolate, let's self-protect.
Yeah.
Like, no, let's be reasonable. Let's right. take precautions. But who else can I take care of?
Right. And that's the thing I even saw when you were talking about reading through the Passover and saw that, you know, God had everyone come together, you know, in that time. And so there is something to be said for reaching out to community and reaching out to others in that time, because yeah, you don't want to be on your own, you know, walking through stuff like this at all.
Yeah.
So I think that's so, so vitally important.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. You know, I guess just to kind of wind down, looking at kind of from the same mentality that Malachi brought up with the God has not given us a spirit of fear. One of the, mm-hmm. the grid work I always look at is that passage in Galatians 5. There's a section where it talks about the fruit of the spirit versus the works of the flesh. Mm-hmm. And basically one of those is the right way to respond. One of those is the wrong way to respond. And so as believers out there, as people listening to this podcast are paying attention and considering whether you believe what's going on or not, whether you are weighing the facts against the politics, whatever, when you come to your conclusions, consider what's driving it. Is it the fruit of the spirit or is it the work of the flesh? Right? The fruit of the spirit is love, joy, peace, mm-hmm. forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. That's according to Galatians 5. 22 mm-hmm. and 23, the works of the flesh, they're not all relevant here, but stuff like envyings, murderers, drunkenness, revelings, wrath, strife, seditions, heresies. If you're on Twitter just getting mad all day
yeah.
about people talking about pandemics and coronavirus, that's the works of the flesh. If mm-hmm. you get mad every time President Trump speaks, that's works of the flesh. That's not the same thing. That's not the driver right. we should be operating by. And so I think it's real, real important for us to take advantage of these moments, whether it's as big as they say it's going to be or not, there is clearly a crisis. We can look at the stock market. We can look at this is having economic impact. Yes. It already has that we don't know the measure of yet, but it's already happening. So there are things happening right now. The measure of it, we don't know, but we need to be paying attention and we need to utilize these moments to build something real, something true in us and in our homes and make sure we're operating from the right foundations, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what we're bringing you from the end of history in this podcast today. Obviously, you can find a more scientific approach from a lot of other podcasts. You can find a more political approach from a lot of different podcasts. But what we're looking at is helping believers form a posture, a correct posture in times of crisis. And in times of history-making events, that's one thing. I've always wondered what it would be like to have lived through the Dust Bowl, through the great right. influenza, through World War I, World War II. We're living through something right now. There's stuff going yeah. on right now, and we are in the middle of history, whether you like it or recognize it or not. And so mm-hmm. pay attention and build something good inside you and inside your home. And for those of you, as just to close, for those of you who think you might be locked up in your home for the next couple of weeks, or sometime in the next couple of weeks due to a pandemic sweeping the land and you're looking for something to do, let me recommend a good book. It's called How the World Ends by J.B. Shreve. Go check it out at Amazon. And that will be my plug for the day. Thanks for listening to J.B. Shreve and the End of History. Dr. Nichols, Lindy, thanks for joining us tonight. We'll see you at the next episode.
Thanks for listening to The End of History with J.B. Shreve. Check out more episodes at iTunes and wherever you download quality podcasts. Join us online at theendofhistory.net for articles and essays from the end of history. Follow JB on Twitter at JB_Shreve. The End of History is produced by Windmill Media.